This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
This is the Michael K. Show.
Last night was like, boy, wouldn't it be great if they found a way to come back? And then they did. And that's been kind of the theme this year. Whatever you ask for, it seems to happen. You're shocked when they don't come back and win. You're shocked when they don't get the big hit. That's what I'm saying. It's a different animal. And Ron Darling said it best. We brought it up a buck. 27 hard outs. You know what I'm talking about, Michael, where they don't give up at bats. They do not go down easy. 5-2 in the ninth inning, they'll find a way to put a couple of runners on and send the tying run to the plate. It may not happen, but they don't go quietly into that good night. That's something that's special. That's something that seems to be different with this team. And there's a lot of guys on this team that were part of teams before. That's why I think Buck's had an influence. He's modest, but believe me, he's instilled that in a lot of these guys.
The Michael K. Show.
I'm proud to be Yankee boy.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Ah, yeah, it's been a great show so far. We've had one kindred spirit on earlier. Now the other kindred spirit will come on. Buck Showalter in the 3 o'clock hour. And now, Jeff Van Gundy here in the 5 o'clock hour, and we welcome Jeff to the show. Jeff, it's Michael, Don, and Peter, and even Buck said that we should say hello to you.
Yeah, man, is anyone hotter in New York than him right now? He's got it rolling.
He does have it rolling in a big way. Team's playing great, and he seems happy, but with Buck, you can never tell. He's a lot like you.
Yeah, you're only happy when you're unhappy. That's it.
Exactly. Yeah. He actually, I wonder if you agree with this. He once told me, he said, I don't find the joy in winning. He said, I find the joy in not losing.
You know, I think there is some of that. I wasn't like that. I think the joy in not losing was when you were playing a bad team and you just wanted to get through it unscathed, right?
Yeah.
But I think there was joy in winning when you were going up against a really good team, particularly road games, and you found a way to beat a good team on the road. I don't think there was, I don't think there's any better 5 minutes in life than the first 5 minutes after a great road win.
I guess also what he meant, I wonder if you felt like this, the agony of losing, this is probably the way he put it, the agony of losing is much worse than the joy of winning.
Right, the losing hurts more than winning feels good.
Right. Do you agree?
No question.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And especially when the games get magnified in the playoffs. I think there's a sense of relief when you win a series and get to move on, but there's utter despair when you're not successful in the playoffs.
Which leads us into our first point, the utter despair in Brooklyn. First off, Jeff, are you shocked that this ended in a sweep?
Actually, the sweep part, yes, but I actually was surprised Brooklyn could keep the games as close as they did. I thought it would be one of those easy 4-1 series wins for Boston. I thought Boston was, and I do think they're the best team in the East. I thought they would beat them easily in Boston, split in Brooklyn, and then go back to Boston and win it in five. Instead, I thought Brooklyn, really the only game I thought they did not play well was game three. Other than that, I thought they actually played well for their level of talent.
Level of talent? I mean, you don't think Kyrie and Kevin Durant give them the two best players on the court?
No. No, I mean, there's a grouping of four, right? Like Irving, Durant, Tatum, and Brown.
Right.
And in any given game, you know, the best player could switch up because they're all very talented. But after those four, like, to me, the construction of the roster of Boston, the size and strength of Boston, the versatility of Boston, they had by far the better team. And it showed in the regular season, particularly over the last 3 months. And it showed in this series.
Now, I have to really parse this question the right way because I want to get your answer on this. Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, seem like they are in charge of the Brooklyn Nets. Now, I know this is a star-driven league, but I was around those Knicks teams that you coached. Patrick Ewing was as big a star as you can have, but he was eminently coachable. He wanted to be coached. I don't think he shied away from it. I'm not sure that these guys, pretty much maneuvering that Kenny Atkinson leave and Steve Nash get there, that they specifically want to be coached. Can a team win if the players are really running the show?
Well, I think you're right in how you parse the question, because I've only had one experience with Kevin Durant. That was in this last year's Olympics. Mm-hmm. And he was ultimately coachable. That doesn't mean he didn't have strong opinions. He does have strong opinions. Any great player does. And I think that goes to the next point, is that when you're a management person and you're a coach and you're a great player, you've got to understand that this is more partnership than it is dictatorship. And thus, everybody's going to have their opinion be heard. And then ultimately, the roster is at the discretion of management, and the coaching decisions are at the discretion of the coach. What I think has gotten interesting in this situation, particularly with Irving, not Durant, is, like you said about Ewing, Ewing voiced his opinion strongly, but it always was behind closed doors, and it never got out. He never was in a press conference saying he was going to work with the owner to correct what needed to be corrected. And I think that's what's different about how Irving's gone about it, is he's been very public that, you know, we're all going to work to come up with the best solutions, versus saying what most players say is, I leave that to management, or I leave that to the coach, and then behind closed doors make their opinions heard, and heard very strongly. So I just think Irving goes about it differently. Mm. He goes about it in a much more public fashion, where most great players would keep it behind closed doors.
But it almost take it to a different level, Jeff. Like after the game, you know, Kyrie's talking about, you know, I'm going to get together with Kevin and Sean and Joe. Like, he didn't even mention Steve. Now, that could mean that Nash is gone, but it also mean that, I'm sorry, no matter who's coaching the team, they don't have a say. That it's one thing to not want to be coached, but it seems like they're coaching the team.
Well, it could have been an oversight. Like, right after the game, I'm not going to jump to the conclusion that means Steve is, you know, in trouble, or they don't want to be coached by him, or they don't want to be coached at all. I think, guys, that the best players I ever coached, they had the right amount of coachability and the right amount of stubbornness. You need both. Because you can't be easy as a star player, because you're dealing with a lot of critiques, and you have to be strong in your belief in yourself and in what you want to accomplish and what you're able to accomplish. And sometimes when you're trying to search the fine line between coachability and stubbornness, you're going to go over the line into too much stubbornness, and it's going to come off poorly. But the best players I've ever dealt with always could snap back into the right level of coachability. And I don't pretend to know what the Nets players, their coachability is, but to think that you don't have to be coachable, or you don't need coaching or good coaching, I think would be a huge mistake if any of their players believe that.
Jeff, what would you do with Ben Simmons? I almost think that you're kind of hamstrung if you're a coach, because Ben Simmons, his representation keeps bringing up the mental issue as well. You can never doubt that, because that's a very real thing. And you don't know if it's real or not with that player, but it's a real tightrope you have to walk. Could a coach come up to Ben Simmons before game three and say, hey, dude, we need just 10 minutes from you. Let's go. We need you. Or is that just, you can't do that in 2022?
One of my favorite Riley stories, guys, is I forget what regular season game, but we were in a regular season game, and one of our better players had been out for a few games, and he was in his suit in the locker room before the game. Riley comes walking in before the game and turns and sees the guy in the suit, and he knew he was in the suit and wasn't playing, but he goes to the player, could you just, if I needed 1 minute from you, could you give me 1 minute tonight? And the player said, sure, coach. And he goes, then why the F aren't you dressed? And it was one of the most powerful, and then he walked out. There was no, that was it. That was, there was no review of the game plan. That was it, right? So, but I think you make a valid point. In 2022, if you did the same exact thing, it wouldn't be looked upon. Like, the rest of the locker room was galvanized by when Coach Riley did it. It wouldn't be looked upon favorably. And guess what? It may be dangerous.
Right.
Right? Because we don't know. Everybody is guessing about Ben Simmons right now. And frankly, Ben Simmons and his representatives haven't done a good job of explaining. And all these leaks from sources close to Simmons, I don't think have done anybody any good, right? So I have no idea if he's healthy enough to play or not, either does Steve Nash. And so I thought Steve Nash played it well. Like, that, you don't start guessing on that. You don't try to push on that. You stay, just like out of physical injuries, you stay out of it as a coach, because that's not your level of expertise or area of expertise. And so, yeah, I think he played it right. And I think, you know, I've seen some harsh criticism of Ben Simmons. And while I understand it from people, I also think, you know, you just got to be careful when you're judging another man, particularly when it comes to mental health.
Well, you mentioned Steve doing a good job with that. How did he do just coaching in the series? Because, like, from my untrained eye, and I am admittedly a Celtics fan, it seemed like Udoka just completely out-coached Steve Nash in the series. Is that a am I wrong for seeing it that way?
I always like to go back to the facts, okay? So they had a better record by, what, 8 games, mm-hmm. I think? So to me, they, just from the regular season, they'd be heavy favorites. They were healthier than the Nets, Ben Simmons and Joe Harris out. And so were we saying in game one at Boston with the Nets up 3, man, the Celtics staff has certainly outcoached the Nets staff. I don't think so. Were we saying at game 2 at halftime, down 12, man, Boston's really out-coaching the Nets? No, but what happens is we go back to the results. So we look to the after the fact. So I always want to know, what move did Steve Nash make or not make that you feel should have been done? Like, should he have had Patty Mills, Goran Dragic, Seth Curry, Kyrie Irving, 4 of their 8 guys that they used, like, take human growth pills before the series to get them bigger and stronger? Like, this was a mismatch from the start. And I am surprised that people are making it out. It does. Ime Udoka and his staff did a great job and have done a great job. But you don't coach against another guy. You coach against your own team. I thought Nash and his staff did an outstanding job and got a lot out of a very limited group. And, you know, last year when Steve Nash had the better team against Boston, and Boston wasn't healthy with Jaylen Brown out, Robert Williams out, Kemba Walker hurting and smaller guard, you know, they won 4-1. You know, both series to me played out to where in the last 2 years, the better team won and won handily.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm curious, Jeff. So when you were an assistant under Riley and you work closely with every single one of those players, let's say you got a big job in the East and you played the Knicks like Udoka did. He was with the Nets and then he gets the job with the Celtics. Would you be at an advantage because you know all of their secrets, the things they like, they don't like, the things that could set them off? Was Udoka in a position of power simply because he knew all of the secret sauce?
I do believe, especially from a personnel standpoint, you have a big advantage, particularly when you're dealing with the personnel. Like, few things give Durant problems or Irving problems? There's no question to me that's an advantage. I thought when I was in New York and Coach Riley was in Miami, he had a big advantage at first when – him knowing our personnel better than we probably knew their personnel. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I do think it's an advantage that Ime had. And I think also with that, particularly Ime had even more experience with Durant this summer in the Olympics and, you know, had saw Tatum and him, you know, work against each other. And so, yeah, I think there were some advantages there from really knowing personnel, because I don't know, like, if you guys believe this in baseball, maybe it's not true, but in basketball, I've always believed you don't really know someone until you coach them. Mm-hmm. And I think Ime, having coached Durant and Irving, had an advantage there when he started the game plan.
So what do you do, Jeff? I mean, do you just give Kyrie the big contract, you know, or do you let Kyrie go and run the risk of upsetting KD? Do you count on Simmons being ready next year? I mean, how does this offseason go for Brooklyn?
Those are all great questions, because there's no simple answers. The idea that you can definitely say that Ben Simmons will be healthy next year and ready to go, I don't think you can say that. He just set out a whole year, and he's having what are they saying, like mental roadblocks. There's no guarantee that the roadblocks will be eliminated starting next year. But what is eliminated is probably the ability to now trade him, right? Philadelphia was able to trade him, and they got Harden. And you know, the Nets got some other good pieces as well. But so I think they're going to have Simmons. They'll have Durant. I think the Kyrie Irving, he's in charge. He can opt in. If he opts out, I think it's a really it's a major decision. Do they think that do they have enough depth, or would they be served trying to use whatever, let's say it's $40 million that they would give Kyrie Irving? Are they better using that on two or three players to build up their depth because of the trouble Irving and Durant and Simmons in this past year have had staying on the floor? You know, Durant's played, I think, 90 games in his 3 years there. Kyrie Irving has played, I think, something like 103 games in his 3 years there. And Simmons hasn't played a game yet. And so hopefully they'll get Joe Harris back. They'll be able to fortify their front court. And then I think the big decision is, do they have enough quality depth, or do they have to go out and take Irving's money and redistribute it into multiple players?
Do you believe, Jeff, and we're talking with Jeff Van Gundy of ESPN here on the Michael Kay Show, do you believe that this could be the death of the thought of a super team? And I think it worked in Miami, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm completely off base. I think it worked in Miami because you had a dude running that team, Pat Riley, that was not going to be told by LeBron James what to do, what players to get. And in Brooklyn and in L.A. with the Lakers, the players are now totally in charge because you don't have that alpha male like a Pat Riley that could wave his rings at them. So, I mean, there aren't that many Pat Rileys in the world. So does this keep teams away from acquiring great players like that and putting them together and hoping for Miami, or am I off base?
Well, I don't think there's a way around trying to win a championship without great players and multiple great players. I think the question, if you go back to the Laker example with Anthony Davis and James,
right?
They had those two, and then they had depth surrounding those two. Caruso, Contavious Caldwell-Pope, Kuzma, etc. Then they traded their depth for what was perceived to be a third star in Westbrook, and it bottomed out in that James and Davis had injuries, and then they didn't have enough depth. And that, so I think quite possibly the better method would be, now the Bucks have the three stars, right? But they have their hierarchy. They know it's Giannis, then Middleton, then Holiday, right? And they fit together well, and they've been able to still put enough depth around them. But if you have a choice between three stars and a lack of depth, or two stars with more depth, I'm taking the two stars and then trying to have enough depth, because guys just don't play as much in the regular season, which is going to hurt your seeding, which is exactly what happened to the Nets. Think about it. The Nets were in first place in the East, I think it was January 23rd. They were 29-16. Boston was a game under 500. They were 23-24. And then what happened? Durant got hurt. Boston took off. The Nets fell off the cliff because of Durant's injury, Kyrie's lack of availability, the Harden trade, right? And they got a poor seed. And because of the poor seed, they had to play what I think is the best team in the East in Boston in the first round. And they lost three games that were really close, a fourth game that really wasn't that close. And they're disappointed. So I think the model is still great players, Michael, but I do believe you need enough quality depth so that when guys invariably sit out during the year, you still have enough good players where you can win and get a high enough seed to put yourself in good position to make a long run.
So along those lines then, I look at it this way. I don't know if you agree. Probably the first bad move they made was then trading for Harden, because you take away a rim protector like Jared Allen and that depth you're talking about. They might have been a better team. They never would have been involved with Ben Simmons. The whole James Harden drama wouldn't have happened. They probably went for one more star than they needed.
Well, listen, it's hard putting together teams. And everybody who's ever done it, I'm sure, has regrets. And I'm not trying to speak for Sean Marks like he regrets trading for James Harden. But that was a more than reasonable thought back then, because remember, now they gave the indication that they all wanted to do it together. Well, their first playoff series or playoff run was wrecked due to injury. Their next one was wrecked due to Kyrie's lack of availability, Durant's injury, and then Harden grew where he wanted to be traded. So it didn't work right. And Jared Allen has taken off and is a terrific center, and exactly what the Nets need now. So you can make that critique, but back when they traded for Harden, it looked like a very logical move. But unfortunately, even the things that make sense when you're doing it, they still rely on people to try to make them work. And in the end, Harden wanted out, and it led to Simmons coming to New York and then not being available.
All right, final thing. Who's winning? I mean, what you've seen so far, who do you have in the finals?
Boston and Dallas.
Really? Wow. Is that because the loss of Booker, you think, kills the Suns?
Yeah, I think they're going to lose in the first round. It just shows you how close teams are. There was a 28-win difference between Phoenix and New Orleans. New Orleans was 10 games under 500. But in the season, they traded for C.J. McCollum, Larry Nance, a terrific trade. And before the season, they traded Valanciunas, and they got Valanciunas, and they moved Adams on. So they improved offensively, and then they hit on a second-round rookie, Herb Jones, who's a terrific defender. And so without Booker, I actually think New Orleans has better talent. And so I think they're going to win this series. I think they'll lose a tough series to Dallas. And I think on the other side, Memphis, Minnesota, it's 2-2 right now. It's very interesting what's happening. I think the top two seeds in the West are in trouble right now, both at 2-2.
Well, it should be great. Well, I said last question, but this is the last one. Peter brought this up earlier, and I agreed with him. So after the Nets lose to the Celtics, right immediately afterward, Kyrie is hugging players with a big smile on his face. As a coach, would that burn you, or you just have to accept it?
It's just how it is now. It's the same way I think about the handshake line in college basketball. Right. To me, it's absurd. Like, that doesn't show anything about character, just getting in a line after a Little League baseball game and saying, good game, good game, good game. I don't get that. But I don't really care what guys do after the game. If they're, if they want to hug guys on the other team, so be it. What I care about as a coach is what you did to get ready to play, and then how hard you played, how unselfishly you played, and how smart you played. If after the game you want to hug somebody on the court and catch up, it may not make sense to me. It may not be what I feel like doing, but I'm not going to lose a lot of energy worrying about what message that sends.
Last thing I got for you, Jeff, have you watched Winning Time at all?
Yes.
What are your thoughts?
I have no idea if it portrays the people accurately or not, but it's a heck of a show.
I agree. I agree.
And guess what? If I was being portrayed and I thought it was wrong, I'd be upset too.
What do you think about Adrian Brody as Pat Riley?
You know what? Obviously, Coach Riley's huge. Like, people don't realize how big and strong he is. Like, he's 6'3", 6'4", 225 or whatever he was when he played. I don't know. So Adrian Brody's a lot thinner, but facially it looks like it's at least reasonable. And if I was Coach Riley, I'd be like, man, they got a star to play me. He's got to be feeling pretty good about that.
In your travels, Jeff, have you ever met Jerry West?
Yeah, a couple times.
Is he like that? Is he like the guy in the Winning Time?
You know what? I haven't. I don't know either way. Like, he might well be, but my interactions with him have been very, tame. Like, hello, and then just gotcha. Keep moving on. I'm gonna say this. The owner, I have no idea if that's how he was or anything like that, but I can understand if you feel like you're being portrayed, poorly, how you'd be, really frustrated. But that doesn't take away from it being a very entertaining show. And I read the book, and I thought the book was good too. So, but having said that, I've been a part of books too that, took liberties with the truth a little bit. So I get why it would bug you if that's what you feel as a, like, I've read Jerry West is upset a little bit, or you know, whoever Kareem was upset to. So, yeah.
Well, great stuff. Enjoy the rest of the run. Thanks for coming on with us, Jeff, as always.
Anytime, guys. Take care.
That's Jeff Van Gundy. A lot of stuff to talk about. 1-800-919-3776. We'll come back. We'll break it down for the people right here on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York. The ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.